We're talking about a difficult thing. It is miscarriages. You're with us on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're looking at pregnancy loss at all stages, a first miscarriage, a second pregnancy loss, maybe more. We're exploring how to make this experience more bearable, more out in the open, as it affects hundreds of thousands of women each year. Losing a baby is a big part of so many families' lives, and the statistic that we hold on to is this: 1 in 4, an estimated 1 in 4 pregnancies ends spontaneously. Have you been touched by this? Did it happen to you? What do people not understand about miscarriage? Are you the partner or family member of someone who has had a miscarriage? How do you talk about it? We're at 800-642-1234, and we're spending the hour here. Julia Bueno is a psychotherapist who specializes in working with women who have experienced pregnancy loss or struggle to conceive. Her new book is called The Brink of Being, Talking About Miscarriage. Julia, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm delighted.
So this is coming from a very personal place for you. Not only do you work with women who are dealing with this, but you've also been there yourself. Why did you want to go here and give voice to miscarriage?
I think that my experience of miscarriage, my first miscarriage now, was about 17 years ago, but it was my first pregnancy, and it was a very profound experience for me. And in the wake of that, I experienced what a lot of women still feel. I think 17 years later, although things have changed, and I can speak more for the UK in terms of the kind of the taboo loosening its grip a bit, but I did experience profound isolation and a misunderstanding and terrible loneliness in amongst the kind of grief. And what I look back now, probably some clinically recognizable anxiety. And through that personal experience, I wound up getting some professional psychotherapeutic help, and actually it became the sort of galvanizing reason for me to retrain as a psychotherapist and choose the path I have. So it was a case of sort of wanting to reach out and give to others what I hadn't experienced.
Did you find that there were stages that you went through, and was each stage perhaps distinctly different than the past, or was this a journey that a therapist could tell you, okay, this is going to happen, and then this is going to happen, and then you're going to feel this? Was it predictable?
No, I'm afraid I don't believe in stages of grief. I don't think I'm unusual with that. A lot of therapists I would call colleagues now here, we sort of don't subscribe to that in the bereavement field so much as a sort of oscillation of feelings. And in the kind of on the macro level is a case of sort of coping and then not coping, kind of feeling kind of vaguely at peace with things and then feeling overburdened with feelings. So that sort of oscillation of feelings, but the feelings themselves are very changeable. What is, I suppose what I say to people, anything goes and anything is valid. Whatever you feel really is valid. I've heard it all. But having said that, the risk of contradicting myself, what is quite common is to experience a profound sense of loss and grief, but also anger and also envy sometimes some very sort of deep existential feelings of, for a lot of people who, with their first miscarriage, it can kind of rip through their life and make them see life very differently. A kind of innocence is taken away. But in terms of whether that journey goes in a kind of predictable trajectory, I kind of challenge that. But a lot of people do feel those feelings I map out at different times. And just to throw in the mix, partners too, and I write about this, they have historically been quite ignored in the process, but partners often feel very similarly to the woman who has miscarried, but again, at sort of different times and at a different pace. Some of those feelings are really very difficult to speak about. I sort of think about envy in particular. A lot of women and their partners are very reluctant to admit to that feeling. We sort of feel it sort of ugly inside of us. But I think that's sort of, I don't think I've talked to anybody who hasn't experienced it.
We're learning about miscarriages this hour with your questions, your stories, and emotions along the way. Our guide is Julia Bueno. She's a psychotherapist, and her new book is called The Brink of Being, Talking About Miscarriage. Join in anytime in this conversation, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Tamara joining us from Toma. Hi, Tamara.
Good morning. Thank you so much for covering this. This is a really important topic. About 4 years ago, I experienced a pregnancy loss when I was 6 months pregnant, spontaneous preterm labor. And I found that the process for us was so interesting, not only experiencing our grief, but how my husband and I varied in our grief process. And then the profound isolation we felt afterward, not only because it feels like such an unusual event that only you are experiencing, but then because we ourselves sort of withdrew from family and friends who were having babies at that time. It was just too painful.
Tamara, how can you describe how different your grief was compared to your partners, your spouses?
Yeah, absolutely. I found that I really just sort of wanted to ruminate on it. I wanted to talk about it and process it, whereas he really very much wanted to distract himself from it. That was sort of his coping style. And so that, I think, led to some arguments between us about that. And eventually just kind of realizing that was his process, I had mine, and the importance of seeking psychotherapy immediately following that to process my own feelings of guilt and self-blame was very important. I want to mention I did go on to have two very healthy pregnancies, and I think that has changed how meaningful parenting is now for both of us and how we sort of view that differently now.
Julia, what do you hear?
Tamara, thank you very much for calling, and I'm so sorry to hear about your loss. And just my mind has been buzzing as you've been speaking, because a lot of points you make resonate with my experience over the years of talking to women and couples. The sense of isolation, as you say, is a sort of recurrent theme for so many of us, which I think there's a lot of reasons for that. In short, we don't have the language, we don't know what to say culturally. There is a real dearth in knowing how to respond appropriately. And I think, as I said, there's a lot of reasons for that, which I could go into, but I feel like I want to say other stuff that you've brought up too. It's very common, again, in my experience, for couples to, heterosexual couples to walk the path of grief differently. I write about this a bit in my book. Maybe not everybody agrees with me on this one, but I think that men are socially conditioned to grieve in a way that is different from women. I think it's easier for women to be with their feelings, and women tend to be better at reaching out to their friends and their networks and speaking to those who they feel safe with, whereas men are more socially conditioned, I think, to be supportive and strong for their partner and to be a bit more stoic and to keep stuff inside, and you know that can cause sort of misunderstandings. And it was great to hear you say that, you know, once you understood that that was just his way of doing it, you know, you could understand each other. When that doesn't happen, of course, there can be great kind of friction between couples. But that, you know, this is something I think that we as a culture and indeed the kind of research community need to know, understand more about that partners, how they grieve and how support will be good for them.
Having a conversation about miscarriage with therapist Julia Bueno, her book is called The Brink of Being. Do you think there's a lack of cultural understanding when it comes to miscarriage? What could be done to change that? What questions do you have about pregnancy loss? Join in at any point, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. We're talking about something that can cause distress, that can be wrapped up in so many emotions. Conversation is about miscarriage. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And author Julia Bueno has been here with the heartbreaking loss of her twin daughters at 22 weeks. And part of writing the book was the editing and the revisions. And she needed to relive this miscarriage journey again and again. And she writes, a midwife pressed their four tiny feet into a sponge steeped in pink ink and then transferred their footprints onto separate white cards, remaining the most important legacy of their beings that she has. Have you personally been affected by miscarriage? How did you get through this time? What do people not understand about your experience? Join in at 800-642-1234. And Julia Bueno stays with us through the hour. Her book is called The Brink of Being. Julia, this topic doesn't get much attention, as you mentioned through the book. You start out by saying, look, one in four pregnancies are estimated to end in miscarriage. But you also say it's quite possible that these estimates are low. Why is that?
Well, there's a real difficulty in nailing exact numbers around miscarriage because the research papers rely on clinically recognized pregnancies, which means that they've sort of been in contact with a doctor and or hospital, and it's been recognized in that way. But of course, there are countless pregnancies that go on, you know, without the medical radar at home, and sort of, you know, we test ourselves at home and may lose it at home. So, with a pregnancy test. Mm-hmm. We also know that certainly the kind of the demographic trends are that women are having babies or thinking of having babies later on in life, certainly in the Western world, in the UK, in America and Canada. I understand that's the case too. So, and we do know that the risk of miscarriage increases as we get older. So the number, it's interesting, you know, if you can jump on any research papers and it will be one in four or one in five or even one in eight or one in nine. The estimates vary wildly depending on how it is tracked and what variables are used. All of this points to the fact that historically miscarriage is under-researched and misunderstood. That is beginning to change. And in the UK, we've had a recent huge amount of investment into kind of researches of causes and prevention, but it's been woefully late. And the research papers sort of reflect this with inconsistent numbers, really.
Inconsistent data. Let's go to Hillary now, joining us from Wauwega. Hi, Hillary.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
So I had a miscarriage a few years back. It was very early in my pregnancy, but I just remember the feeling of looking on the ultrasound screen, just hoping that, you know, I saw something that looked promising. And, you know, in sharing my grief with my friends and my family, I heard often, at least you weren't farther along, at least you weren't full term. And I just found that to be very invalidating of my grief and my loss. So I guess I would just recommend to other people who maybe don't have a miscarriage experience to just validate, because it is such a deep sense of loss and grief, to just validate that person.
How did you respond in those circumstances?
I think I just said that this is very real for me, irregardless of how far I was, and just tried to impress upon them that this is a loss to me. But I just think there's such a lack of understanding, unfortunately, if someone hasn't had that experience. I think they're trying to help. They're trying to make you feel better, but that's just not the best way to help.
Julia, go ahead.
No, I'm so sorry, Hillary, to hear what you went through. And I've been nodding wildly here listening to you. But something I actually write about in my book, that, you know, any sentence that begins with the words "at least" it isn't really going to be helpful. It completely misses the mark, as you say, that one thing that people, I think, don't yet understand, that regardless of how long the pregnancy has lasted, that baby or child has nestled in your mind for a very long time. When a baby is, you know, wanted, and often people don't conceive in the first month, it can take a while. In my case, I write about my first pregnancy, it took a year, and it's a very long time for a much wanted, much loved baby to be living in your mind, in your partner's mind too. So that the size of the loss is enormous. It's not just a case of, you know, a couple of weeks of a pregnancy. It's much more profound than that. And that relationship, I think, is very, very real, that exists, that psychic relationship. And that is something that yes, culturally we don't understand yet. I'm very sorry to hear that you experienced that, Hilary. But you're, as you probably know, you're really not alone.
Julia, during a pregnancy, when is a miscarriage most likely to occur? Do we know?
Well, the vast, vast majority of miscarriages happen in the first trimester, so i.e. before the first 12 weeks. Again, the data is inconsistent, but my first miscarriage was very rare. Anything between sort of 75% and 90% of miscarriages happen at, or even more, at 12 weeks. It's very difficult for me to kind of pin down and get a unified one. But we do know that the vast majority are before 12 weeks. Again, we don't know kind of which week, because in the UK, most we tend to have a standard scan at 12 weeks. I understand that it might be different in the US, where a lot of people might find that they have what's called a missed miscarriage. They have a scan at 12 weeks to find that their baby might have died a few weeks before, but again, they don't know exactly when. My first miscarriage was a rare one, but one thing that I impress upon the readers of my book, that I really don't believe in a pecking order of grief. And by that, I mean that, you know, the longer the pregnancy lasts, the greater the grief you're entitled to. It just doesn't work like that. Because as I say, the kind of child in mind might be living there for a very, very long time. And also I sort of wrote about the case of again, this is more and more couples, as they turn to building their family later on in life, are turning to fertility treatments. And in the UK, so we think 1 in 6 couples will suffer fertility problems and will turn to fertility treatment. And, you know, by definition, if you conceive after fertility treatment, you would have been trying for a baby for a very, very long time.
There's a history there. Yeah.
There's real history there. As I say, this sort of child in mind has lived there for a very long time, and, you know, maybe even years, maybe even a decade. And to miscarry a baby after that sense of yearning and longing, even very, very early on in the pregnancy, can be a huge grief. It isn't just, you know, from the outside, oh, well, you know, at least it was early on. This is a very profound loss.
Let's bring in Jennifer now in Appleton. Hi, Jennifer. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I actually experienced a second miscarriage very recently, last month. And in both of those experiences, really did emotionally well, just reminding myself of the statistics, knowing that it is quite frequent. However, with some additional diagnosis of a partial molar pregnancy, this grief knocked in on me. And I think it's tied more to a lack of control in, you know, my ability to plan for my family and, you know, even have any control over my own body. And I am seeking counseling. And my question is there really a specialized sort of therapy or counseling that I need to do, anything I can do as a patient to, you know, kind of guide my care and make sure I'm getting the right kind of therapy as I go down this journey?
Jennifer, thanks so much. And Julia, she did say partial molar pregnancy. Can you also define that?
A partial molar pregnancy is a very rare condition where an embryo doesn't actually form, and the cells can actually become don't develop in the usual way. So it's a sort of anembryonic sac. It needs a very specialist treatment and a specialist care. We would very much kind of treat it under the psychologically as the under the umbrella of a miscarriage. It's a very early pregnancy loss, but yes, the treatment is quite invasive and needs quite a lot of tracking afterwards to check that hormone levels are correct. But in terms of the sort of care after that, so it's a good question. I think that bottom line, a good therapist should be able to support anybody through experience of pregnancy loss if they've had good enough training and an understanding. But having said that, if you can find a talking therapist who has an experience of supporting women and couples through the loss, then it might kind of give them a shortcut through terms of just being able to discuss medical care and treatment without having to explain stuff. But it, you know, the grief around miscarriage is a grief that is a human experience that any therapist should, I believe, be able to support someone with.
The book is called The Brink of Being. Julia Bueno is with us. Your questions, what do you have questions about in supporting a spouse or a loved one at this time? What do you wish people understood about miscarrying a baby? Join in at 800-642-1234. We'll get back to this conversation right after this news update on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the sensitive subject of miscarriage here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Miscarriage is an experience that often leaves a woman and sometimes her expectant family members with tremendous grief. Up to 1 in 4 pregnancies are estimated to end in miscarriage, and every woman's experience is unique. Julia Bueno writes in her book, The Brink of Being, that women often experience early miscarriages at home, in their bathroom, with no medical intervention. She writes, we'll never know how many, as no country keeps a register for such unhappy events. There's space for your experience, your insights on pregnancy loss at 800-642-1234. Do you think there is a lack of cultural understanding when it comes to miscarriage? What could change that? What questions do you have about pregnancy loss? Call in. You can also email ideas@wpr.org. And Julia Bueno stays with us for the hour. Julia, many couples do choose to get pregnant again after a miscarriage. How does the experience of a pregnancy loss change the emotional stakes for a subsequent pregnancy?
Well, I don't think I've ever talked to a woman or a couple after a pregnancy loss who isn't anxious, nervous about it happening again, although the kind of odds remain in your favor. But once you've been a kind of victim of low odds, you know, that kind of reframes your experience, really. And people talk about, I often hear the kind of phrase, you know, my innocence was taken away. Often couples go into their first pregnancy seeing the healthy baby coming out the other end, you know, in their mind. They don't expect it to happen to them. So it can be a very anxious time. And indeed, you know, some poor couples will have maybe more than one loss, 1, 2, 3, 4. I mean, I've met women who've had 8, 9, 10 losses. And you can imagine what that might be like to hold a pregnancy after that. Very rarely it can become a very serious mental health condition. It can be clinically recognizable kind of anxiety disorders. I have worked with very rarely some women who are very, very unwell as a result of so much loss and grief.
Well, historically, has there been much medical and psychological research into the emotional toll of pregnancy loss?
Well, it took a while to really kick in. And I write about this in my book, that it was really only in the beginning of the 80s that some sort of serious psychological attention was turned toward the psychological experience and emotional experience of pregnancy loss. I mean, for a stupefying amount of time, it wasn't expected that women would suffer after the first kind of literature was around stillbirth. So babies were taken away from their mothers at birth, and they were told not to see their babies and to kind of crack on and get pregnant again, not assuming that they could have a relationship with this baby that, you know, didn't exist before it was born. But thankfully, you know, that tide began to change in the early 80s, a lot to do with campaign work from pregnancy loss organisations and various other advocates of bereaved mothers. So, yes, it's and the research has sort of thickened more in recent years. So we are getting to understand more and more. An interesting new strain of research is around trauma. And we're beginning to recognise that miscarriage can heighten your risk for kind of serious traumatic responses, PTSD, I'm talking about, which, yeah, as I say, is a relatively new aspect of research, and alongside the research we know to do with anxiety and depression, that miscarriage can heighten the risk of those psychological sequelae.
Let's bring in Barbara now, joining us from Madison. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. I wanted to bring in the fact that I was 16 weeks pregnant when I lost a child, and we had just told my other children that were 5 and 6 years old that the next summer we were going to have a baby. And then my husband said, well, I was in the hospital because the baby died. And I didn't think the kids had really processed the idea that I was pregnant and that we were going to have a baby because we had just mentioned it. But when I came home, they had each spontaneously drawn pictures, one a self-portrait with tears running down his face, and the other one an empty crib. And I think we're so caught in our own grief, we don't recognize, I'm sorry, years later, and I'm still emotional, we don't recognize the grief of our loved ones.
Barbara, thank you for bringing that. Julia?
Barbara, I'm so sorry to hear of your loss, and no wonder that it's still upsetting to think about, because this sort of grief doesn't go away. And I think you're absolutely right, and I'm really glad you bring that point up. And this is also something that I write about in my book, that of course a miscarriage doesn't always just happen to the mother. It took us a woefully long amount of time to realise that it would affect the partner too. But of course, there are other family members and siblings. You know, we're wise when we're little. We might not even have the language to speak about things, but we can understand things, and we know what's going on with mum and dad, and we know when they're upset. And I'm just guessing, Barbara, that your 5 and 6 year old sort of heard the word baby and sort of knew about this baby as well. So it's no wonder they experienced their own loss. The other thing I write about in particular is, of course, the experience of my own mother, who was very intimately involved with my first pregnancy, as mothers often are. She was very excited about my first pregnancy. And, you know, I would share every scan with her and my increasing girth, you know, she would share the joy with, and she was buying baby clothes and very excited about it. And she, in fact, came to the hospital after the birth of my twin girls and met them and held them. So she had her own grief. She had her own relationship, just as other family members may well too. But we don't often think about that. You know, as we've been talking about all morning, it's we often don't think about the grief of the mother, but let alone other family members that could be affected. So thank you, Barbara.
Having a candid conversation about miscarriages this hour with your questions, your experiences along the way. And our guide is Julia Bueno. She is a psychotherapist, author of the new book, The Brink of Being, talking about miscarriage. Are you the partner or family member of someone who has had a miscarriage? How do you talk about it? Do you talk about it? And how do you grieve? Join in at 800-642-1234. Julia, when you first sit down with people who are struggling to process a miscarriage, how do you approach the conversation? What do you ask?
I ask them to tell me their story. I give them, I think, a priority. I give someone a space to let me know what happened to them. I'm curious, not in a prurient way, in a compassionate way, because it's genuine for me. I genuinely want to know. And what fascinates me always is that the story begins way back. You know, it begins with when someone met their partner and when they decided they wanted to build a family and when that child began to live in their minds. You know, we try to, often the story is we try to conceive in February, and then we were pregnant in August. And the whole story is a nuanced and complex and detailed one. And I let someone tell that precisely because I don't think we have the space to say that elsewhere. Not many people are curious to hear the whole story. They might respond to the fact of a miscarriage, and they might say, "Oh, I'm sorry, you've had one," but it kind of ends there. But what my experience tells me is actually, well, that was a little life that a parent wants to tell about. So that's the first thing I do, is just tell me what happened and start at the beginning.
Let's bring in Rick now, joining us from Ripon. Hi, Rick.
Hey, hi, thanks. I just wanted to ask whether or not you thought this issue of miscarriage was kind of in this category of almost shame-based problems that families and individuals have, where we aren't able to talk to each other and reach out to our community for help and support. You know, when you hear about people whose home is burned down or something has happened where it's very public, they always talk about how much it meant to them that so many family members and community members reached out and helped them through the crisis. And yet there's this category of crisis like miscarriage and suicide and depression and others where people kind of hunker down and don't allow the community to participate. And for men in particular, it really cuts us out of this problem. Even in the show today, we talk about women experience it different, and it makes it more of a women's problem as opposed to a couple or a community issue. And I just wondered if you had thoughts on the process of trying to open this up for shared grieving and support.
Rick, thanks. Julia, how do we bring in the community to help support in this situation?
Well, I guess it's I agree with you, Rick, and thank you for your point that there is something about shame that needs to be prized apart and dismantled for us to be able to talk about it with ease. There's quite a few points that buzz around my head as you were speaking, but I think it's fair to say that shame does linger, and that lingers as long as women and men are expected to be successfully reproductive and successfully fertile. We live in a very pronatal society still. And I think there is a great pressure upon women and men to have children. There's a shame without to sharp childlessness. And that creates a tremendous kind of sense of, self-criticism. If quote unquote, I'm doing air quotes here, a pregnancy goes wrong. So in order to be able, I think that's one thing that we need to dismantle, to be able to talk about it with greater ease and to normalize it, because it is normal. This is a normal reproductive event.
The book is called The Brink of Being. Julia Bueno stays with us. Still time for you to share your experiences, where you've been on this journey at 800-642-1234. We'll be back in just a moment. We'll pick up this conversation right here on the Ideas Network. This hour, we're talking about pregnancy loss, miscarriage here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Discussions about miscarriage have evolved, but therapist Julia Bueno says there's more to go here. She urges people to unhush the experience for the sake of others who suffer. She lost her twin girls at 22 weeks pregnant, and that miscarriage was so monumental that she changed careers to focus on helping women cope with pregnancy loss. Still time to hear your thoughts on miscarriage at 800-642-1234. The book is called The Brink of Being, and Julia Bueno stays with us. Julia, before we went to break there, you were looking at more of the community approach to helping women through this. And Rick was saying, look, we are so focused on this being a woman's issue. How can we bring in more support here?
Yes, I'm with Rick that, as we've talked about this morning, that miscarriage doesn't just affect a woman. Of course, her body has to go through that physical trauma and she bears the kind of physical brunt of it. But to bring in a community support, I think, involves the community really thinking about what stops them, what stops an individual from responding to a miscarriage with candor and honesty and openness, and as a previous caller said, you know, validation. I think that, that there isn't a kind of simple prescription that I can offer. I think it's a case of each individual looking inside and wondering what it is that holds them back, because I think it can be different from each person. I think for one person, it might be a kind of a misunderstood sort of historical legacy of, well, we don't talk about women's reproductive issues. You know, I could go on. We don't talk about menstruation or menopause or birth trauma or any of this stuff. And there's a sort of whole historical piece there about women's reproductive lives being pushed under the carpet. And some people might sort of subscribe to that belief. For another person, they might feel very uncomfortable politically about supporting a woman's grief through an early miscarriage when they might be very pro-choice. For another person, it might be that they're very squeamish. You know, I've come across this at all. People just don't want to think about early miscarriage because it conjures up some sort of visceral images and ideas that they just don't want to go there in their mind. So I could go on. I think there are various complicated interplaying factors as to why there is a taboo around miscarriage.
We have so many people who would like to speak here. Let's go to Steve in Sun Prairie. Steve, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. And I'm so sorry for your loss and some of the callers that called in. It's just devastating to hear the pain in their voice. And I know you just touched on it, but one of the challenges is that a large segment of our society, and it appears to be a growing segment of our society, that believes an unborn baby is nothing but a wart. And why do you grieve about getting a wart removed? So how do you answer people that are so pro-choice that don't even view these babies as worth anything more than, you know, a wart being removed? How do you handle that, and how do you deal with those people?
So, and Steve is making the point there that not everyone grieves following a pregnancy loss.
Yes, and that's absolutely right. And I certainly make that very clear in what I say and what I write, that I absolutely fundamentally agree that a pregnancy is an individual experience, and a woman's relationship with her pregnancy is hers alone. That is her call, and that is her truth. And that is what needs to be validated and supported. Yes, indeed, there might well be miscarriages that aren't grieved. And indeed, a miscarriage might even be a relief for some women. I absolutely support that. So that's my very simple answer, is that you listen to the woman with compassion, curiosity, tune into how she is describing her experience and her story. And that is what you tune into. Yeah, Steve, I can't really kind of add any more to that. That's my job anyway.
Let's bring in Jason now in Appleton. Good morning, Jason.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. And my condolences also for your tragic loss. My wife and I have been through several miscarriages, and, you know, we're fortunate enough to come through the other end with a beautiful family that's healthy. But the one thing I want to stress is that, you know, nobody teaches us how to be parents, and it's kind of a taboo subject. And, you know, when we had our first, you know, couple, they were very traumatic, and we suffered in silence. And, you know, once we started to talk to people and, you know, open up, they told us how common they are, and it's part of it. So I guess my only point is our experience, which is, you know, suffering in silence. And I would encourage others, especially for first-time parents that are just announcing or just getting pregnant, you know, just talk to them about it, about the possibility, and that it's a common occurrence. And so at least they're prepared for it, because I don't think we were prepared at all.
Mm-hmm. Julia, go ahead.
No, thank you. It's lovely to hear men calling in and talking about this. And Jason, I'm very sorry to hear about so many losses. It must have been incredibly difficult. But I'm absolutely with you that if you have the courage to speak up, you know, miscarriage stories beget miscarriage stories. And most often that when people do speak up, they'll find, you know, other people come forward and share. But wouldn't it be wonderful that we didn't have to rely on kindred spirits? We didn't have to rely on other families who've been through such a bereavement. You know, my hope and desire is that we get to a stage where we can open up to anybody, because they'll understand and be there with you, regardless of having trod a similar path. But you know, short of that happening, absolutely, I would encourage people to seek support, because there is, and you know, in my day, I didn't have the internet was new, and online support forums were completely alien thing for me then. I think they barely existed, but there, you know, there is great solace that can easily be found amongst others, and you don't have to suffer in silence or in extreme isolation anymore.
Let's go to Linda now in Madison. Hi, Linda.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Yes. So within a month, I had family members on two different sides of the family who had been going through the in vitro process to get pregnant, and both of them had failed and had finally found out that they would never be able to get pregnant. And there was a deep sense of grief. And all I could say was how sorry I was. I had no words of support. What would have been a good way to respond?
Julia?
Well, I want to gently challenge you there, Linda, because I think saying I'm sorry in that heartfelt way that you just conveyed to us just now is an enormous amount that we can give. There are no magic words. It's a profound and unfair experience, and it's deeply, deeply sad. But to sit with somebody's grief and just say, this is so awful and I'm so sorry, in that genuine way that you did, can mean a hell of a lot. In my experience, it's when we don't say anything and we don't validate and we don't acknowledge the hugeness of it that can be hurtful.
Julia, let's make time here in our last minute together. You have said there's room for improvement in the medical community. Can you help us understand that? What would improvement look like at hospitals, in clinics, in the doctor's office?
With only a minute to spare, I think bottom line, it's a lot of it is to do with resourcing. I can only speak for the UK, and we have a very cash-strapped National Health Service here that is really lacking resources in lots of areas. But if there was a magic wand, we need a lot more resourcing to provide training for staff who in specialist kind of care for pregnancy loss and communication skills, that pregnancy loss is steeped in the medical arena with medical language, which is very jarring, and that can often come up for people who have had experience in hospitals, find it very, very upsetting to have their, for example, their baby described as a product of conception. Or, you know, I write about this in my case, my cervix is an incompetent one, which is a very blaming word. So there's a lot to be done around training, but also in terms of providing specialist bereavement suites for couples to experience their loss in. One urgent area is in emergency care. I think the same is the case in the USA too.
And we have to leave it there. Yeah. Julia, thank you for joining us.
It's been a complete pleasure. Thank you so much.
Julia Bueno
me.
Is a psychotherapist. Her new book is The Brink of Being, talking about miscarriage. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the Ideas Network.